I've given a sermon not too long ago about prophecies in the book of Amos. And now this one is about prophecies in the book of Hosea. Now, the word Hosea means something like salvation. It was written about 753 to 722 before Christ. And it's talking about the time just prior to the day of the Lord. Amos was covering more events during the day of the Lord. Now, Hosea lived together with Amos and also with Isaiah and with Micah. And so you have some similarities. You will undoubtedly notice those as we go through the book of Hosea. I would say that the book is extensively and perhaps even to an extent only a warning for the end-time nations of the houses of Israel and Judah. Now, sometimes the emphasis is on Ephraim. Ephraim, the son of Joseph, the son of Israel or Jacob. Now, Israel can refer to the United Kingdom, so Great Britain. It can also perhaps include English-speaking nations, with the exception of the United States, especially when Israel and Judah and Ephraim are mentioned at the same time. Now, on the other hand, if just the word Israel is used in the book of Hosea, it can refer to all descendants of Jacob. That would mean the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Starting with a very complicated passage, perhaps difficult one, is Hosea chapter 1 and verse 2, which says, Hosea chapter 1 and verse 2, and we basically will stay in the book of Hosea today. When the Lord began to speak by Hosea, the Lord said to Hosea, "Go take yourself a wife of harlotry and children of harlotry, for the land has committed great harlotry by departing from the Lord." Now, either this passage is figurative, allegorically, because it was a vision, or he married a woman who would later become a harlot. When you read verse 3, it says, "So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, and she conceived and bore him a son." So this seems to be then a sexual relationship within the marriage. But then, if you go to verse 6, you read, "And she conceived again and bore a daughter." It doesn't say bore him a daughter. So this seems to be referring to fornication. And then also in verse 8 we read, "Now when she had weaned Lo Ruhamah, she conceived and bore a son," not him a son. So again, we are talking about now adulterous relationships. Then when you go with me to Hosea chapter 3, let's read verses 1 to 3. Hosea chapter 3, verses 1 to 3. "Then the Lord said to me, 'Go again, love a woman who is loved by a lover or a friend and is committing adultery, just like the love of the Lord for the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love the raisin cakes of the pagans.'" Now, the raisin cakes are also mentioned in the book of Jeremiah as a means to worship the quote-unquote queen of heaven. It goes on to say, verse 2, "So I bought her for myself for 15 shekels of silver and 1.5 homers of barley. And I said to her, 'You shall stay with me many days. You shall not play the harlot, nor shall you have a man. So too will I be toward you.'" This seems to be the same woman. In the meantime, she had become a slave of somebody else. And Hosea is asked to buy her again, bring her back, but of course there would not be any sexual relationship, all symbolic for God's willingness to have mercy for the house of Israel and the house of Judah in the future. So if we go back now to Hosea chapter 1, and verse 4, and of course then the house of Israel and the house of Judah would not commit idolatry anymore. Hosea chapter 1 and verse 4. Then the Lord said to him, call his name Jezreel, for in a little while I will avenge the bloodshed of Jezreel on the house of Jehu and bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Bring an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. Now this could refer to a literal king in Great Britain. They would not have a literal king anymore for a while. It could also refer to the rulership of the countries of the house of Israel, in particular the United States. Now, let's look at some parallel passages. Hosea chapter 3, verses 4 and 5. Hosea chapter 3 and verses 4 and 5. For the children of Israel shall abide many days without king or prince, without sacrifice or sacred pillar, without ephod or teraphim, and afterward the children of Israel shall return and seek the Lord their God and David their king. In other words, God will rise up and raise up David. We're talking about the end time, obviously. And they shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. So up until this point, it appears there is not going to be any more king. However, you want to look at king in this context. Also notice chapter 10 and verse 3. Hosea 10 and verse 3. For now they say we have no king, because we did not fear the Lord. And as for a king, what would he even do for us, even if he had one? So again, the time is going to come, no more king, no more ruler in the house of Israel. Verse 7, as for Samaria, the capital of the house of Israel, her king is cut off. So this clearly now talks about the United States of America. Her king is cut off, like a twig on the water. And also notice verse 15. That becomes even more specific here. Hosea 10, verse 15. Thus it shall be done to you, O Bethel. Bethel, that's where the idolatry was going on for sure. Because of your great wickedness, at dawn, the king of Israel shall be cut off utterly. At dawn, in the morning, it will happen very, very quickly. Also in chapter 13 and in verse 11. Now here it says, I gave you a king in my anger and took him away in my wrath. A better translation, and that's how the German Luther Bible has it, I gave you kings in my anger and took them away in my wrath. See, it's not just talking about King Saul, who was, you know, given to the Israelites by God, and then, of course, God took him away. It's talking about other kings. And, of course, this is an end-time prophecy anyhow. Now, also notice Hosea chapter 8, verses 1 to 4. Actually, we have been saying this for a long time, that the time is going to come when Britain will not have a king over them for a while. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 1. Set the trumpet to your mouth, he shall come like an eagle. Now what animal, what bird is always associated with an eagle? Now apart from America, but of course this is now an attack on America, we're talking about of course Germany. He shall come like an eagle against the house of Israel, or the house of the Lord rather, because they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. Now I want to stop right here. We heard in the announcements the terrible conduct by ICE in numerous cases, and we only had a few articles in our update. It's talking about they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. Did you know that if you enter the United States of America illegally, then yes, indeed, you are committing a federal crime. But if you enter the country legally and overstay your visa, you do not, and I repeat, you do not commit a federal crime. And in order to be arrested, in both cases, you need a warrant. And the warrant has to be signed by a judge. You would never get a warrant for anyone who is overstaying his visa. No judge would sign that. When it comes to the warrant for those who are here illegally because they entered the country illegally, some judges might sign a warrant. But what is happening right now, ICE is not even looking for a warrant by a judge. They just give one, one agent gives a warrant to another, and that then is enough for them to arrest people. Totally illegal. Totally unconstitutional. Now, what is also unconstitutional, even though the United States Supreme Court has said that, that if you lie to the government, you commit a crime. But if the government lies to you, that's fine. Not a crime, nothing. Can do it. And that's why you have so many ICE agents lying and lying and lying to do their quote-unquote job done. Now, how can that be legal? How can that be in light of the law of God? It is a complete and total atrocity. And that's why we read in here, he shall come like an eagle against the house of the Lord, because they have transgressed my covenant and rebelled against my law. It goes on to say in verse 2, Israel will cry to me, my God, we know you. Yes, we are those who are following you. We have to bring Christ back into Christmas, and we have to go to churches on Sunday, and on it goes. What does God say? You say you know me, and you break the commandments. You are a liar, and the truth isn't in you. They will cry, my God, we know you. Israel has rejected the good. The enemy will pursue him. Verse 4. They set up kings, but not by me, or not by my will. They made princes, but I did not acknowledge, better, I did not approve of them. From the silver and gold they made idols for themselves, that they might be cut off. These are strong words. Yes, we are voting for rulers, voting for whatever we are voting for, presidents, chancellors, prime ministers. God says, I didn't approve of that. I didn't. That's not my will, what you guys are doing. You are cut off from me anyhow. So again, why would we participate in voting, right? Let's go back to Hosea chapter 1, verses 6 and 7. Hosea chapter 1 and verse 6. We have read already the first part. She conceived again and bore a daughter. And then God said to me, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will have no longer mercy on the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. Yet I will have mercy on the house of Judah, will save them by the Lord their God, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword or battle, by horses or horsemen. Since the end time is mentioned here, we are talking about the fact that the house of Israel never returned to the promised land. In this regard, God did not show mercy for the house of Israel, but the house of Judah would return to the promised land, prior to Christ's return, of course. But again, they didn't return because of sword or battle. They returned because God made that possible. When you go on to read in Hosea chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. Chapter 1, verse 10. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured or numbered. And it shall come to pass in the place where it was said to them, you are not my people. There it shall be said to them, you are sons of the living God. And then the children of Judah and the children of Israel shall be gathered together and appoint for themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel. They appoint for themselves one head. It could be reference to David. It could be, of course, also reference to Christ himself. They're coming back together. This has never happened before in the history that both the house of Israel and the house of Judah came back together into the promised land. But that was something which is going to be happening. And look what they are going to do then. Hosea chapter 5 and verse 6. Hosea chapter 5 and verse 6. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they shall not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. That seems to be a description of what we are experiencing today. But it will change. It will change, because if you look at verse 15, it says, I will return to my place till they acknowledge their offense. Then they will seek my face, and in their affliction they will earnestly seek me. Perhaps while they are already in the great tribulation as captives. We read in the Bible that when they are captives, those who survive, they will have repentance and they will recognize what is happening to them. And then they will seek God, and then God will have them found, and he is going to be one whom they can find. Now, as I said, this could be during the time of the great tribulation, because we find something very interesting about that in Hosea chapter 6 and verse 2. Hosea chapter 6 and verse 2. After 2 days, he will revive us. And on the third day, he will raise us up, that we may live in his sight. So maybe this is a passage which could include and indicate that the great tribulation will not last 3.5 years, but that the days will be shortened, and maybe only on the third day, during the third year, perhaps, it will end. Something to think about. But we clearly read that God will raise them up on the third day, not after the third day and after 3.5 years. And God will do something else. In Hosea chapter 2 and verse 18, Hosea chapter 2 and verse 18, in that day, now here clearly a reference to the day of the Lord. In that day, I will make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field, with the birds of the air, and with the creeping things of the ground. Bow and sword of battle I will shatter from the earth to make them lie down safely. He will do away with war. Christ comes to make wars cease on the earth, as we read. And we also read for us today, you want to take the sword, you'll perish by the sword. Hosea chapter 2, verses 8 to 9. Now let me just say that if you follow me, let's say with the German Bible or with some other translations, you have different numberings. It makes it quite confusing. So I'm going with the numberings here in the New King James Bible. Hosea chapter 2, verses 8 and 9. For she did not know that I gave her grain, new wine and oil, and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal, the sun god, the one who is being worshipped on Sunday, whose biggest day is Christmas. See, they used all that richness they have to commit idolatry in the eyes of God. He goes on to say, and therefore I will return and take away my grain in its time, literally at its appointed time. It's pretty much preordained as to when that's going to happen. And my new wine in its season, in its appointed season. And will take back my wool and my linen, given to cover her nakedness. See, then there is no more cover. Then everybody will see their nakedness. In other words, the fact that they are completely without any shelter and hope and protection and security from God. Hosea chapter 2 and verse 11. And I will also cause all her mirth or joy to cease, her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbaths, all her appointed feasts. This is talking about not God's feasts. No, it is her feast, her new moon. These are the man-made holidays which they have come up with under the inspiration of Satan. All these holidays you have, whether it's Christmas or Easter or Halloween, or Valentine's Day, we just hear a lot about. Another pagan holiday. And God says it's going to be taken away with. That will also be totally taken away with. There is another passage in Hosea chapter 10 and verse 5. Hosea chapter 10 and verse 5, which says, the inhabitants of Samaria, again, capital of the house of Israel, fear because of the calf of Beth Avon, like the golden calf, for the people mourn for it, and its priests shriek for it, because its glory has departed from it. Its priests. The German translations have it better. They are making it very clear. We're talking about the Catholic priesthood in the way that is being translated, Götzenpfaffe. Pfaffe, a word referring to the Catholic Church. Quite interesting. And those who may know that the holy days of God have to be kept. Now, maybe they didn't keep it. Maybe in the Great Tribulation they recognize, wait a minute, we should have kept those days. We didn't do it. Of course, they will have a great time, so they think, but it's too late. It will be too late. Because notice what it says in Hosea chapter 9 and in verse 5, a warning for us not to take the holy days lightly. Because God says, well, the time may come, you may want to keep them, and you can't keep them anymore. Hosea chapter 9 and verse 5. What will you do in the appointed day and in the day of the feast of the Lord? Yeah, what will you do? You are a captive. You're not allowed to do that. So make sure you do it now so you don't become a captive. Hosea chapter 4, verses 1 to 3, a scripture which we have quoted quite a bit in the past. But again, we have just read about the fact that there's going to be a covenant with the beasts in the future. But notice what it says about now, or our time, Hosea chapter 4 and verse 1. Hear the word of the Lord, you children of Israel. Now that can include just everybody who is a descendant of Israel. For the Lord brings a charge against the inhabitants of the land. It can also be translated the inhabitants of the earth. There is no truth or mercy or knowledge of God in the land or on the earth. By swearing and lying, killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break all restraints with bloodshed upon bloodshed. And therefore the land or the earth will mourn, and everyone who dwells there will waste away with the beasts of the field and the birds of the air. Even the fish of the sea will be taken away because of this terrible, wrong lifestyle of mankind. And America and Britain, who should have been better examples, are at the forefront of this abominable conduct. And then let's look at verse 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Now we're talking about the knowledge of God, as we have just read about. They don't have the knowledge of God, and they are being destroyed because they don't have that knowledge. Because they have rejected knowledge, God's knowledge. I will reject you from being priest for me, because you have forgotten the law of your God. I will also forget your children. Yes, if you as a parent don't go by the law of God, you teach your children that you don't have to obey the law of God, of course, they will follow that bad example. Notice chapter 6 and verse 6. Hosea 6 and verse 6. This is what God desires. He says, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, not some outward religious ritual. No, I desire mercy and the knowledge of God. That's what's lacking, he says. I desire that much more than burnt offerings. Now, as it was pointed out in the sermonette, you can have the knowledge of God. If God calls you, if he has called you, he can give you and will give you his knowledge, his understanding, So make sure you grasp and hold on to that. And don't go by the knowledge of man, which is a terrible, wrong way to live your way of life. Notice Hosea chapter 8, verses 11 and 12. Hosea chapter 8, 11 and 12. Because Ephraim, mainly the United Kingdom, perhaps some other English-speaking nations like Canada, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Zimbabwe. Because Ephraim has made many altars for sin. Did I mention New Zealand? I don't want to leave that one out. Many altars for sin. These are all these pagan altars, these pagan churches for sin. They have become for him altars for sinning. I have written for him the great things of my law. Oh yeah, it's available. It's all in the Bible. But they are considered a strange thing. What? Keeps the Sabbath today? Holy days? Are you crazy? Should stay away from unclean meats? Let alone tithing? Now, tithing is probably something many churches still preach, but what about the rest? Lying, stealing. Oh, well, I shouldn't lie. I shouldn't steal. Shouldn't commit adultery. A strange thing. Notice Hosea chapter 11 and verse 7. My people are bent on backsliding from me. Though they call to the Most High, none at all exalt him. Now, there is another way of putting this. Hosea 11, verse 7. The Luther Bible 84 says here that when you preach to them, nobody lifts himself up. Yeah, you preach. We preach. We are preaching the word of God, preaching the gospel of the kingdom. People hear it. Are they changing their way of life? Are they saying, oh, wait a minute, I better do something about it? Like I did when I read the first lesson of the old Bible correspondence course, when it says the world is going to end. And I thought, oh, I better do something about that. Now the world is going to end soon, a lot sooner than when I came to the truth, you know, many, many years ago. No, people don't believe it. Don't want to believe it. Don't want to change their ways. They are happy with how they live. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 4. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 4. Now let no man contend or rebuke another, for your people are like those who contend with a priest. Again, not the best translation. Should really read, now let no man contend or rebuke for another or one another, but I must contend with you, the priest. Because if we are talking about priests or ministers in the Church of God, that's a strong warning to those who don't do what they're supposed to be doing. Of course, it can also refer to the priests of this world, and God is not certainly going to contend with them because they preach all the wrong things. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 8. They eat up the sin of my people. They set their hearts on their iniquity. They eat up the sin of my people. The idea is they are being nourished by the sin of the people. They get a lot of fortune, a lot of money, a lot of wealth out of the sin of the people because they live sinfully and the money is floating and flowing into all these different churches. As you can see, God is most certainly not amused by that. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 12. My people ask counsel from their wooden idols, and their staff informs them. For the spirit of harlotry has caused them to stray, and they have played the harlot against their God. Harlotry. As we have read about at the beginning, maybe a figurative description of what Hosea was supposed to do. Maybe it was figurative, maybe it was real, but it had all to do with the fact that Israel was committing harlotry against God. And this book has a lot to say about that spirit of harlotry. Go back to verse 11. Notice what it says. Hosea 4 and verse 11. Harlotry, wine, and new wine enslave the heart. Getting so used to it. Getting so used to play the harlot, to walk away from God, do all the wrong things, get involved in all the false religions, that it's difficult to get out of this for many. When they learn the truth, it's quite difficult. They don't know how to quite do this. Oh, what are the parents going to say? What are the friends going to say? What is my mate going to say? But notice, Hosea 4 and verse 17. Hosea 4 and verse 17. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. They drink, and their drink is rebellion. They commit harlotry continually. As other translations have it, with desire. They want to do it. Her rulers dearly love dishonor. Wow, isn't that true? Look at our rulers. And look how they live in a way which doesn't show much honor. Notice Hosea chapter 5, verses 3 to 4. Hosea chapter 5 and verse 3. He says, I know Ephraim, and Israel is not hidden from me. Most people today have no idea where Ephraim is today, where Israel is today. They think Israel, oh, that's referring just to the state of Israel. No, no, it's much bigger than that. That's why you hear about the lost tribes of the house of Israel, because they have no clue as to where they are and who they are. But God says, I know them. I know exactly where you are. He goes on to say, for now, Ephraim, you commit harlotry. And Israel is defiled. Giving a bad example, if you're talking about his United Kingdom, then other nations follow that wrong example. The same will certainly goes true, is true for the United States. Verse 4. They do not direct their deeds toward turning to their God, for the spirit of harlotry is in their midst, and they do not know the Lord. Or they may say, I know God. No, the spirit of harlotry, which enslaved their hearts, prevents them from really turning back to God. Also notice chapter 6, verses 10 and 11. Hosea 6 and verse 10. God says, I have seen a horrible thing in the house of Israel. And there is harlotry of Ephraim. Israel is defiled. Also, O Judah, a harvest is appointed for you. Don't think you're any better. When I return the captives of my people, well, then there's going to be a harvest, and there's going to be a reckoning also for Judah, the house of Judah, the state of Israel, the Jews all over the place. They're all guilty, all of them. Notice Hosea chapter 5 and verse 5. Hosea 5, 5. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Oh, yes, do we have? Oh, America, making America great again. Oh, we are so proud that we have the American way of life. And, you know, everybody loves us and everybody respects us. What nonsense. Nobody loves us. No, nobody respects us any longer. But we are too proud to admit it. The pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore, Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity, and Judah also stumbles with them. All three together will be destroyed when the beast power comes to power. And that will happen so quick. It will happen so quick. And when it hits us, we may not know. When I say we, I'm talking about the nations. They may not know what hit us. They will fall together. That has never happened before either in the history, that Israel and Judah fell together. That's an end-time prophecy. That's what's going to happen. Hosea chapter 5, verse 7. Hosea 5 and verse 7. They have dealt treacherously with the Lord, for they have begotten pagan children. Pagan children. In other words, children who are not worshiping God at all. Foreign children, it could also be translated. Notice now. Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. A new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Keep your finger here in the book of Hosea, but I'd like to go with you now to the book of Zechariah, chapter 11 and verse 8. Zechariah 11 and verse 8. Notice we have just read, a new moon shall devour them. Now notice Zechariah 11 and verse 8, which says, I dismiss the three shepherds in 1 month, in one new moon, if you please. My soul loathed them, and their soul also abhorred me. It says, I dismiss the three shepherds. It can also be translated, as the margin has it here. I destroy them. I cut them off. Now, we have a free booklet, The Fall, or The Rise and Fall of Germany and Europe. And if you are talking about these two passages in Hosea 5 and Zechariah 11, who are those three shepherds? They could very well be referred to as the three leaders of the United States, Great Britain, and the State of Israel. They could also refer to the religious, political, and monarchy leaders of the United States, Great Britain, and Israel. One thing is clear. It's going to happen very quickly. It's going to happen to those three countries and the leadership. If you go back to Hosea chapter 5, let's read verse 9. Hosea chapter 5 and verse 9. Ephraim shall be desolate in the day of rebuke. Among the tribes of Israel, I make known what is sure. They're not going to be without warning. And look at the parallel passage in Hosea chapter 7 and verse 12. Hosea 7 and verse 12. Wherever they go, I will spread my net on them. I will bring them down like birds of the air. I will chastise them according to what their congregation has heard. Now, who has warned them? What congregation are we talking about, which has heard what is being proclaimed? We're talking about the Church of God. We're talking about the fact that the Church of God has been used by God to warn the nations and even the membership, because it's all going to happen. And God says in the book of Amos, I'm not going to do anything unless I tell the prophets, my prophets first. And those who are inspired can also be referring to prophets, quote unquote, what I will do. So they are going to be warned. We are warning them. It's out there. People can listen to this warning if they want to. They can read about the warning if they want to. Well, most don't want to, but it's still out there. In Hosea chapter 5 and verse 10, let's talk a little bit about the house of Judah and the Jews, because God doesn't hold back on that one either. Hosea chapter 5 and verse 10. It says, the princes of Judah are like those who remove a landmark. I will pour out my wrath on them like water. Now, who is removing the landmark or borders today down there when it comes to the state of Israel, when it comes to the Gaza Strip, when it comes to all the other occupied places, places which, according to God, the state of Israel has no right to at this point. But it goes further. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 14. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 14. For Israel has forgotten his maker and has built temples. Judah also has multiplied fortified cities. Where are they multiplying fortified cities? You know what area. And God is saying, It's wrong. He goes on to say, but I will send a fire upon his cities, and it shall devour his palaces. The palaces, even those very wealthy and rich houses where the rulers may live. God will devour it all, will destroy it all. It won't survive. None of that will survive. Now, in Hosea chapter 5 and verse 13, we find another interesting prophecy. Hosea 5 and verse 13. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly, it's verse 11, I'm sorry, I want to mention Hosea 5, verse 13. That's a good one too. Let me read that too. Ephraim is oppressed and broken in judgment because he willingly walked by human precepts. You know, what did Christ say? In vain do you worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. But I want to go to verse 13. When Ephraim saw his sickness, and Judah saw his wound, then Ephraim went to Assyria, and now something is being left out. It should say, and Judah sent to King Jareb. Yet he cannot cure you, nor heal you of your wound. So it is Ephraim goes to Assyria asking for help, and Judah is going to King Jareb asking for help, and they won't get that help. Now, King Jareb, there has never been a King Jareb in the past, as far as we know, in Assyria. It's obviously a name for somebody who lives in the end time. The name means somebody who is quarrelsome, who likes to fight. A reference to the modern king of Assyria, who's also referred to as the king of the north, was also referred to as a beast. So they will actually try to get help from the beast, but they won't get that help. They won't get it. You see, first, of course, it says Ephraim has not even, then Ephraim saw a sickness, but first they never even saw the sickness they are harboring, they are suffering from. Notice Hosea chapter 7. Verses 8 to 11. Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a cake unturned. Aliens have devoured his strength, but he does not know it. Yes, gray hairs are here and there on him. Yes, he does not know it. Britain, in particular, still thinking they are a great, powerful nation. They're still looking back at the time when they were ruling over many, many different nations. You know, you had the Commonwealth. That's long past. But Britain doesn't accept that. He goes on to say, we read this already, verse 10, and the pride of Israel testifies to his face, but they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all of this, verse 11. Ephraim also is like a silly dove. Without sense. They call to Egypt and they go to Assyria. See, it's not going to help. They want to have these alliances. England, I was just reading, tries to get back into the European fold, saying, oh, well, you know, Brexit was a mistake. Let's all go back and then it's going to get better with us. Well, I don't think they're ever going to go back. They may try. But you see, they're like a silly dove. Sorry for our British friends who might be listening in. It's what the Bible says. Ephraim is like a silly dove. Don't know what they're doing. Don't understand themselves what is going on. Chapter 13, verse 1. As I said, they still think they are just such a great, powerful, influential empire. It says here in chapter 13, verse 1, when Ephraim spoke, trembling, now that's not good translated. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling. That's how it should be translated. They spoke and people listened in the past. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling. He exalted himself in Israel. But when he offended through Baal worship, he died. And yes, Ephraim is dying. I mean, when you look at the Church of England, It's almost like the same like the Roman Catholic Church. The only difference is they don't have a pope, but the king is the head of that church. Worship, Baal worship, absolutely, without any doubt. Total, absolute Baal worship in England. Can't deny that. You mustn't deny that. In Hosea chapter 12, verses 7 to 8, a description of Ephraim again. It says, a cunning Canaanite, deceitful scales on his hands. He loves to oppress. And Ephraim said, surely I have become rich. I have found wealth for myself. In all my labors they shall find in me no iniquity that is sin. Well, you read about the way England conquered, colonized the nations, the absolute, total, sinful conduct they engaged in. Read about the history of India. Read about the East India Company, which I have read about. And then they say, oh, we have not sinned. When they use torture to get tax money from the people. See, it's a complete, total misunderstanding and denial of the past. And God says, no, you are going to be held responsible for that. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 13, let's continue with some more prophecies here. Hosea chapter 8 and verse 13. And this seems to be talking about Ephraim, because verse 11 is mentioning Ephraim in particular. So it says in verse 13, for the sacrifices of my offerings, they sacrifice flesh and eat it. But the Lord does not accept them. Now he will remember their iniquity and punish their sins. They shall return to Egypt. Notice it doesn't say they shall return to the land of Egypt. They shall return to Egypt. In other words, they will go into slavery, as Israel was in Egyptian slavery. We will find out in a moment where they're actually going to be held as slaves. It's not going to be the land of Egypt. Notice Hosea chapter 9 and verse 3. Hosea 9 and verse 3. They shall not dwell in the Lord's land, but Ephraim shall return to Egypt and shall eat unclean things in Assyria. Of course, you need to know that Assyria is modern Germany today. And boy, can you find lots of unclean things they eat. And also over the last time, I went to a store and I looked at all that food they are offering there. Not just pork or blood sausage, but we are talking about octopus, shark, all these nice delicacies, right? Of course, all that seafood, all unclean. Oh, they will eat unclean things in Assyria, right? But notice Hosea chapter 11 and verse 11. Hosea 11 and verse 11. They shall come trembling like a bird from Egypt and like a dove from the land of Assyria. So that's where they're going to be, in the land of Assyria, in Egyptian slavery, if you please. But it's going to be the land of Assyria. And he says, and I will let them dwell in their houses, says the Lord. That's when the change comes. In Hosea chapter 9, verses 7 to 8. Hosea chapter 9 and verse 7. The days of punishment have come. The days of recompense have come. Israel knows. Yeah, then they will. Then they will. The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is insane because of the greatness of your iniquity and great enmity. The watchman of Ephraim is with my God, but the prophet is a fowler's snare in all his ways, enmity in the house of his God. A little bit difficult to understand. He's talking first about the prophets of this world, the spiritual man of this world. They are insane. They are fools because they don't know what they are saying. They don't know what they are prophesying. They don't know what they are proclaiming because of the greatness of their iniquity and great enemy and enmity. But then in verse 8, it says, the watchman of Ephraim is with my God. Who are those watchmen? These are those in the church of God who are watchmen, who are supposed to watch what is happening, who are supposed to proclaim what is happening, and then they are loyal towards God as long as God is using them as his watchmen. And so that's the difference. That's the distinction. Comparing it with the prophets and the preachers of this world filled with insanity. No, the watchmen of the Lord, they are still of God. And we are specifically also asked to tell the nations of the house of Israel and Judah today what is going to happen to them, whether they are going to accept it and believe it or not. Hosea 11 and verse 12. Hosea 11 and verse 12. Ephraim has encircled me with lies, and the house of Israel with deceit. Since the house of Israel is mentioned here, Ephraim clearly talking about Great Britain. And then it goes on to say, but Judah still walks with God, even with the Holy One who is faithful. Now, when you read this in light of what we have just read, that would make no sense. And that is why other translations like the Luther Bible 84 have it quite differently and correctly. It says, but Judah does not walk with God either, even with the Holy One who is faithful. They all have fallen away from God. Israel, the house of Israel, the house of Judah, all included. Hosea chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind. His daily increases lies and desolation. Also, they make a covenant with the Assyrians, Ephraim, Britain, as I said. They want to go back to becoming part of Europe. They want to make a covenant with the Assyrians, the Germans. They have already all kinds of covenants or economical ideas and treaties. And then it goes on to say, and oil is carried to Egypt. Well, that wouldn't make any sense either, right? No, it should say, and oil is carried from Egypt. That's where they want to get it from. The rich Arab nations, they are going to sell a lot of oil to the Western nations. Chapter 14 and verse 3. This is what ultimately the recognition and the understanding is going to be. Not now, but then, later. Hosea 14 and verse 3. Assyria shall not save us, that's what they're going to say. We will not ride on horses, on war machines, if you please. Nor will we say any more to the work of our hands, you are our gods. This idolatry will cease, this concept like, oh, look what great things we have accomplished, the work of our hands. No, forget that. It goes on to say, for in you, the fatherless finds mercy, in you, in God. Not in the works of our hands, not in what we have accomplished, not on the great things we thought we have done. Hosea 14 and verse 8. Hosea 14 and verse 8. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do anymore and to do anymore with idols? I have heard and observed him. I am like a green cypress tree. And your fruit is found in me, God is saying. You want to commit, or you want to do any fruit, or you want to, as Christ says, produce much fruit? Well, you've got to be part of me, because without me you can't do anything. And then we have a very important conclusion in the book of Hosea. It's a warning, it's an admonition, which is timeless. But since this is a book for us today, it is specifically relevant for us today. Hosea 14 and verse 9. It says, who is wise? Let him understand these things. Who is prudent? Let him know them. For the ways of the Lord are right. The righteous walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them. And have we not seen this so many times before? You know, Christ says, either they fall on me, and they will actually then become humble people, or I will fall on them and will smash them to pieces. It's our choice. We better make the right choice.